You're listening to South Florida's good news station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content.
When I die and I lay me to rest, gonna go to the place that's the best. When I lay me down to die, going up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm gonna go.
Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance.
Prepare yourself, you know it's a must. Gotta have a friend in Jesus. So you know that when you die, he's gonna recommend you to the spirit in the sky.
Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Markev program, Joe Markev.
You're supposed to tell me to start. You forgot your job. We got Karen, who's honestly the best looking producer we ever had.
That's right.
Because the other three are ugly guys, and Karen's a gorgeous woman, so this is a good thing, right?
I'm just listening.
Karen's just listening. Of course, we've poor Karen. You started putting up with us about 3 years ago.
2 years now.
2 years?
Two and a half.
Two and a half, yeah.
And you scared her away?
Well, we did for a while, but then she came and worked for me for a while, and she said, how long do I have to keep working for you? That was her first day.
And she bailed out at the first opportunity.
She says, I'm going to give you notice how much you want. And I said, give me a month. She goes, how about 2 days? And I said, No, not two days. I'm kidding. I'm picking on you. 1-888-221-8990. Toll free from any place. And those of you that are regular listeners know that Pastor Tom is planning on retiring in June. But in the meantime, he sold his house. And he bought a house up in Georgia. Mm-hmm. So he's in the process of him, I guess, moving is, you know, when you move, that's one thing. But after you get the boxes and you have to unpack and do stuff, that's the most fun of the job.
Yeah, that's quite a job to move out of state, too.
Yeah. So he's up in Rome, Georgia. You know why they call it Rome?
No. It wasn't built in a day?
Very close. It's got hills. I think Rome has six hills or something in it.
Yes.
And I think that's what Rome, Georgia has. So somehow or other, they figured that out. And
now how did you know that?
Tom told me.
Oh. Do you know how they got the name Rome?
How?
From the twins, the Romulus and Remus.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I heard that before. I'm glad. You know, you're a regular font of useless information.
I am.
You're pretty close. You and I are running neck and neck.
I'm a history buff, as you know.
Yeah, I love history,
particularly the Roman.
But I had actually heard that. In fact, they had that on Jeopardy.
They did?
Yeah. And some guy, I forget what the question was, but the Romulus, et cetera, the other two names were...
And they were raised by the she-wolf.
That's right. They were raised by the she-wolf. Exactly right.
Look at this. Well, and we got Alan Love here with no opinion on anything, and it's Yom Kippur, and you're a converted Jew, so you should know all this stuff.
Some of it I do. You know what? We've mentioned your name. My name, but we haven't introduced the other two team members that are here.
I was on my way.
Yeah, he's going.
He got the truck.
I was getting close.
you know, his brain doesn't function as quickly as it used to.
What's your name again?
Vince Rizzino just spoke, and previously Mike Paulus just spoke.
Back in '04.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Joe Martek, financial advisor, Greg Fasula, attorney, Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, said, let's start doing radio shows.
In fact, are we sure that was that date?
No, but we know it was before the hurricanes, Francis and Jean. We don't know which one it was, but that is our official start date because we all remember the hurricanes.
They're only about 2 weeks apart.
Now, one of the things that did happen, though, it was Dan and Joe that said, let's do radio shows to Greg. And Greg said, why? And we said, Greg, because we all have information that the other ones don't have, and we can help people. He says, well, how long do we have to do this?
How long do we have to do this?
14 years later.
Until our ratings go down.
That's when our ratings go down. So we started doing the shows, and then over a period of time, I searched, as Vince knows, for quite a long time to find a compatible, quote, CPA that had credibility, among other things, and it wasn't too old, because... Yeah,
at the time, I wasn't too
old. You were too old.
But how long ago was that? About 7 or 8 years ago?
Been a while.
Yeah.
I mean, and Vince is not only a CPA, certified public accountant, but also a forensic CPA, which means he's recognized by the court system as an expert witness. He can testify in court for or against, depending on who wants him. And he's also a ex-college professor.
But not at Columbia.
But not at Columbia, because, I mean, but he was State University of New York, which supposedly is a little bigger than Columbia, but who would remember that?
Bigger. You know? It doesn't have quite the reputation, but it's a very good school.
There you go.
And I taught at Old Westbury, which was a very nice campus.
Hey, Old Westbury sounds good. Was that in Connecticut?
No, it was in Long Island.
Well, Massachusetts.
It's Westbury.
Then we brought in Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, back when the Great Recession hit, because real estate became a monster subject, and words came along that we had never heard before, especially short sale and foreclosures, deed backs. There was all kinds of aggravation that was going, and then there was tons of misinformation printed by the media. Anybody hear of fake news? Boy, did we hear it then, Mike. Mm-hmm. You remember that? Every day on the radio, TV, newspaper, no mortgage money available. Then Mike would come up and said, that's not true. What they did was they went back to the old rules, which means you had to prove you could make the payment.
Well, I do think that some of the mortgages got a little difficult to get. Like a lot of the jumbo products that weren't backed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or FHA, those became very difficult to obtain. Matter of fact, for a while, they disappeared. We didn't have any jumbo products for quite a while.
But if you were under 675 or 650, whatever's the number?
Yeah, it made it very difficult. But, you know, the mortgage money never went away.
No.
We still had 95% financing. In fact, we talk about this program all the time on the show, is the USDA program.
Right.
That never went away. And that was 100% financing.
And what
we
about,
still have that today.
What about VA?
Yeah, VA is 100% financing.
Yeah.
We still have that today.
All these programs were available.
FHA was 3.5% down.
So what happened is all these programs were available. Now, what happened, underwriting, the old rule back when I was in the mortgage business, before we had all the fancy computers and stuff, was, quote, you had to have the, quote, ability to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was based on can you afford to make the payment. So you had to have a ratio of income to debt, which you have today.
Mm-hmm.
But today they use credit scores also. Back then.
Yeah, they didn't have credit scores when we first started.
No. It was just, hey, show us that you can afford to make the payment and give us your credit references, and they were physically checked sometimes.
Yeah, but you know, Joe, for 30 years I've been in this business, we've always had some kind of no income verification or reduced income verification program for 30 years. So it's not a new concept.
No.
But after the recession, a lot of those programs, just about all of them, went away. They're starting to come back in very limited quantities for certain types of transactions.
This is what I heard. Are we getting more lenient than before, or getting back to the leniency of the past?
Part of the Dodd-Frank Act that kicked in back in 2014 required us to verify your ability to repay the loan, meaning we have to verify your income.
Right.
And that's for primary residences only or second homes. But they didn't mention investment
income
properties.
Right.
So investment properties, there are no income verification loans out there.
Interesting.
Well, the other side of the coin was, even though now, let's just say we have an old guy, Vince's age, and he doesn't have a job, but he's got Social Security, and say he's got $3,000 a month Social Security coming in between he and his wife, but he's got $1 million in the bank or $2 million in the bank. All of a sudden, you're starting to look at that a little more favorably.
Well, that's an unusual situation. Most people don't fall into that category, but
yeah, most people don't, Joe.
We do have a program called asset depletion. What we do is we take your assets and we can monetize that and use that for income.
There you go. That's what I'm trying to say. So they've gotten things that make sense. I mean, here's a person with 800 credit score, but they just don't have income, but they've got lots of assets.
Yep.
So, I mean, literally, these people are as good as gold or maybe better because they don't have a job to lose.
Yeah, and a lot of these assets may be tied up in retirement accounts, so people don't want to liquidate them for tax reasons.
Yeah.
So in that situation, if you have a large amount in, say, a 401k or whatnot, we can use that, even though you're not drawing on that money,
right.
We can use that as asset depletion, amortize that over a period of time, and use that as monthly income.
Sure.
So there's a lot of different ways to verify your income, not just tax returns and pay stubs.
That's pretty creative. I like that.
Yeah.
But
you don't have an actual lien on the asset.
No, not at all.
You know what? You don't have a lien?
No, we don't have a lien on the assets. What we do is...
No, just on the house.
Oh, just on the house, correct.
888-221-8990. All right, class, write that number down. This is important. It's supposed to be sitting next to the phone. So that way, you'll remember to call us, 888-221-8990. And then we added the last member of the group who is not a member. He's a special guest member, and that's retired prosecuting attorney from the great state of Wisconsin, Alan Love, who is also our messy Jew.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you.
Which is more aptly described as a messianic Jew.
Right.
Which means that's correct. And I tell you what, folks, if you see a caricature of a rabbi, this is the man. He looks it. And today is Yom Kippur?
That's correct.
You know, and the reason I think you became a Christian, tell me if I'm wrong, was you were supposed to fast all day today. You don't have to anymore.
That is not so correct, but, you should fast by tradition, but of course, there are always exceptions, medical exceptions for one. But some people can't.
We got to, he said he gave up unleavened bread for Yom Kippur, and I said, you ever eat unleavened bread? He goes, no. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio. Hello.
I have a real estate question. Go right
ahead.
Okay. Me and my wife are married. She is employed, makes her own money, and would like to buy a house. Does that mortgage have to be in my name also in the state of Florida?
Well, is the house going to be your primary residence?
Well, actually, it's going to be hers.
Okay. Well, if you're
not mine.
If someone's going to homestead that property.
Is she kicking you out? Is that what you're saying?
Something like that.
There's all kinds of relationships in the world, Joe.
I'm just helping him along here. You know, I was kind of smelling an exit strategy there with a, what was just let the door hit you and what is that? I forget the rest of it.
Well, that's an interesting question because I get this all the time. If you're still married in the state of Florida, most mortgage companies are going to make you sign the mortgage document. They're not going to make you sign the note, but the mortgage document they're going to make you sign, because if you're buying a house when you're still married in Florida, the spouse can homestead that property. That homestead right can supersede a mortgage lien, and that has a concern for mortgage companies. So they'll make you sign the mortgage document, but they won't make you sign the note, and you don't have to be on the deed.
Now, this is important, what he just said. If you don't sign the note,
exactly what I'm hearing.
There's no liability if you're not on the note.
Correct.
And if you're not on the deed, you don't own it. But this is just basically they want to know that she is a married woman, that you are the house, because there are legal ramifications for marriage in the state of Florida, right?
Yes. And it's kind of like community state property, but a little bit different. It's homesteaded.
Yeah.
So you have a homestead right against that property, whether you're on the deed or not. So if you file a homestead exemption that's your primary residence, then that could interfere with the mortgage company's lien against the property. So they're going to make you sign that, And basically it's saying that you're acknowledging that there's a mortgage and you're okay with it.
That's all it amounts to. Now, You think she's going to trust you when you tell her that?
You got to tell her to listen in.
Well, mortgage company is going to...
They all trust you on the internet, you know?
Well, the other side of the coin is the mortgage company, like Mike just said, is going to do the same thing. If Mike was doing it, he would counsel both of you to make sure you understand and show you the documents, because every state has different laws and rules. But the important thing is You can be on the mortgage and not on the deed and not on the note.
The note is the big document. Yeah. That is your obligation to pay the loan. The mortgage document just simply puts the house up as collateral.
That's all.
Right.
So tell her that you're more than willing to leave after she gives you that $100,000, and then everything will work out well.
I'm looking at that boat too.
I know.
So keep the boat.
Mike and I are both boaters, so there's a whole bunch of sayings about boats, and one of our favorite ones is, of course. It costs a lot, but it doesn't complain.
That's right.
Anyway.
Hey, you guys, I really appreciate it.
Hey, listen, glad to help you anytime. And have your wife call in. We will counsel her and let her know what a wonderful guy you are.
I appreciate that, too.
Thanks for calling. You have a wonderful day.
Take care. Too. Thank you, caller. Bye-bye.
Now, that's something we have never talked about on all these shows, is the difference between a deed, a note, and a mortgage. And, Mike, that's really important information.
Yeah, and most people believe that the mortgage is the most important document up there. Now, to a mortgage company, it's pretty darn important, but the note is your obligation to repay that loan.
And there's some other things that we talk about this occasionally. Let's assume, Mike, you and I go buy a house together, and it's in your name and in my name.
Right.
And that's all it is. It just shows your name and my name. And I die.
Yeah.
What happens to that house?
I have a problem.
You have a problem, right?
Because now I have to deal with your heirs.
Yes. See, what happened is, because the two of us are on that, my half of the house, I'm dead, goes to my estate. Whether I have a will or not, it goes to my estate. So now my heirs, all 19 kids, show up and say, Mike,
we all want to move in.
We're moving in. Mike says, I will sell you my house, half of it for next time. Anyway, that's one thing. Now, let's do another one. Same example. Mike and I buy this house, but we put on the deed after our names, JTWROS, joint tenants with rights of survivorship. Now, I die. What happens?
That means I get your share.
That's it. That's simple. Joint tenants with rights of survivorship. So very often, people buy a house that are not married, and they want the other person to have the house in case that one of them dies, so they put that JTWROS. One more thing, and this is a big one. Let's say Mike and I were married. This is not a pretty picture.
No.
This is a Christian radio show.
Well, yes. Let's get divorced real quick, and let me know. Vince, forget it. Anyway,
forget it.
What I'm trying to say, husband and wife. A husband and wife go out and buy a house. Same last name, same everything, but it doesn't say husband and wife or any inclination on the deed that we're married. Mm-hmm. Same scenario. One dies, and it doesn't say that. That half goes to the estate. Now, in the state of Florida, a married spouse has what they call dower rights. I used to call them dower rights. They have a different word for it now, and I think that's 30% of the value of that half. Am I right, Mike, on that?
That I don't know, John.
I'm not 100% on the percentage, but I know there is some legality that allows a spouse to have dower rights unless they're given away when they buy the house.
Like, how about if it's in a will that their interest will go to their heirs?
Well, the will makes a big deal, but I think if I'm an attorney, I'm going to make sure that thing is drafted when you're buying the house. I mean, here we have this quote, husband and wife, he's getting kicked out and he's going to be on the mortgage and not on the deed and not on the note. But if they don't get divorced, if she dies, he might have a potential of a piece of that house could be his just because of Florida law. Mm-hmm. But if it's treated in the documentation,
as husband and wife.
Yeah, he can be eliminated.
Automatically goes to the other.
Yeah.
You know, the most important thing is to discuss this with your potential partner.
You know, I think she's kicking him out. She don't want to talk to him.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, before you buy the property, work all these details out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'm making a joke out of it, but it's not funny at all, because even if she is buying a house and you are married and you're going to do all these things, a title company, an attorney, the mortgage company, all of these people should advise you. And if you feel at all worried about it, an attorney is the smartest way to go.
Yeah.
Kind of real estate attorney.
And you know, if you are in a separation situation and you're now out, you're going to give the property to your potential ex-spouse, you're out there in the market looking for a house and you're not fully divorced, you have to know what your liability is there, too, because your spouse can file a homestead right against your house that you're buying on your own. So
you just
that could be a problem.
So an attorney is a smart move in that thing, and the attorney can also do the closing. Title companies do the closings, and the attorney should charge the same price as a title company, Mike, most of the time?
Yeah.
And they have... Talk about this. This is a word we've never used on the show. Promulgated rate.
Wow.
I love that.
You know what? That's a 50 center.
Okay, Alan, you know what promulgated rate is?
No.
Good. It's nice. What happens is title companies have a card, and on the card it says what they're going to charge for title insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the promulgated rate is basically the recommended lowest rate. Now, you can charge less, but they almost never do. Promulgated is about as low as they're going to go.
Yeah, for a time, it was actually regulated by the insurance commissioners.
And it may be again. Yeah. And it may not be, because it's been a long, long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, 04 is the last time I owned a house, so you never
know. 04 is that 04?
04. But I'm trying to say is that promulgated rate. So what happens is, if I'm going to go buy a house and I'm going to go to a title company or an attorney, I'm going to say, what are you charging me for title insurance? If they say promulgated rate, that's the right price.
Yeah, and then there's also other fees that the title companies charge. So it is good to get a few estimates to see if you're getting a good deal.
Yeah.
Like there's typically a closing fee, and that could vary from $200 to $600.
Hey, there's no regulation on that.
No.
There's sort of an ancillary thing here. You talked before about divorce, you know. With the new tax law, those that are in the process ought to make sure that it's completed by the end of the year.
This
year. You know why?
Calendar year.
You know why? Because beginning January 1 of 19, any new divorce agreements or settlements, there'll be no longer any alimony deductions, nor alimony income on the other side.
Wait a minute. So if I'm paying alimony to an ex-wife...
Oh, no, it's new agreements, not existing ones. If you already have one in place...
But I'm talking a new one. Now.
New ones, January 1, 19 and forward?
She gets $1,000 a month, and it's not income
not
to
income
her,
for her, and it's not a deduction for you.
Boy, oh boy, she's happy.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to create a lot more divorces.
Well, I know of a couple of clients right now that are trying to get it done by the end of the year, which is why I'm mentioning
it. Yeah, but it's good for one party, but not the other.
Yeah. It's good for the one that's getting it.
Yeah.
Not good for one that's paying.
If I want a divorce right now, why? Well, because I'm going to give you money, and I'm not going to get a tax deduction, and you're going to have to claim it as income, and I don't care about you. You say, oh, really?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of negotiation going on to equalize that.
Equalize
that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What was it? What was the old, the attorney says, you know, how many times do you think you can give away half?
As long as you have something, I guess.
Yeah, right. 1-888-221-8990,
888-221-8990. So I'd like to speak with Mr. Rosino for a few minutes. One of the things that you've talked about are S-corporations, partnerships, LLCs.
Right.
But if somebody is starting a business, what goes into their process to determine what type of business are they starting? Why would you do an S-corp versus an LLC, or why would you do a corporation versus an LLC or a partnership? So could you spend a few minutes?
Sure. It's not that easy an answer, because every situation is a little bit unique, but I'll just give you the overall considerations. I had a client came in the other day, and he has a C-corporation. Why? Because by default it was a C-corporation. His prior accountant or somebody never told him that he could.
Now, what is a C-corporation?
C-corporation is a default. When you go apply to be, or you incorporate with the state. The state of Florida, you go in, file your papers. You are by default a C. That means you fall under subchapter C of the code, the IRS code. You're a C corporation, which is treated in a certain way for tax purposes. It's not a pass-through entity. So which means any income that's earned by that entity is taxed at the entity level. And it could be potentially double taxed, because if there's any profits left that you haven't taken out and you distribute them, then you get taxed again as dividend income. So the corporation profits are taxed, and then if you distribute them to the shareholders, it's taxed again. So that's the downside. The upside, there are certain, for example, health benefits.
Big
there
time.
May be, you know, that is important to have a group plan, for example. Sometimes when you have a C corporation, it may or may not be to your advantage to be a C corp. You might be better off as an S. Or in this case, I had a client that actually is getting divorced, and his spouse is a half interest in this thing. So perhaps in order to get a group plan in place, they may consider doing an S corp.
Is there a minimum number of people that you have to have in a C corp or an S corp?
No, there's no minimums, but they're in an S corp, and I'll explain the difference. In an S corp, it's a pass-through entity. What does that mean? The entity doesn't pay taxes. Everything passes through to the shareholders. Shareholders pick it up on their personal returns. So that has advantages, because there's no double taxation, number one.
So can a shareholder be one person who owns all of the stock?
Yes. In fact, you're limited to 125 shareholders, and also you can't have any foreign shareholders in an S corp. So that's not the desired vehicle if you got a foreign investor is looking to invest, because you can't have a foreign investor in an S corp. Yep. You can in a C corp. So depending on your circumstances, you'd make a decision whether what fits. Another thing is, many times you have partners. And maybe, for example, I have a client that's in the real estate investing. So he's got a couple of partners, but they don't all work equally, and they don't invest equally into the equity of this company. So what happens? They need a means by which they can allocate income. For example, in an S corp, you must give out the profits in accordance with your proportional shares. So if you own 50% of the company, you get 50% of the income or 50% of the loss. There's really no flexibility there. Now, with a partnership, you can divvy it up any way you like. So let's say one partner does all the work, the other's just an investor, and you're the person who does all the work. You find the properties, you handle the GC work, you do it all. You want 80% of the profit to you, you're going to give your investor 20. Well, in the LLC or partnership, you can divvy it up that way without any issues, as long as there's economic substance to it. So that's one of the considerations.
Now, an LLC is a limited liability corporation, but
it's a limited liability company, not a corporation.
Company. Mm-hmm. Okay. What are they limiting the liability of?
Well, they limit the liability to in the normal course of business, you will incur liabilities to vendors, to lenders, and so on. Unless the individual members guarantee a loan personally, the loans get encapsulated inside the entity as limited, meaning you're limited as to only that debt that you've guaranteed. Anything that else that remains in that company, you as a member can't be charged personally for it. So how people get around that is, and a lot of how the banks and other lenders who know this will insist that they get a personal guarantee from
almost
the members
always,
of
right?
the LLC.
Because you're a monster company.
Because they know that you could walk away and leave them holding the bag. So the ones that my clients that are LLCs that have bank lines of credit, for example, they're all personally guaranteeing it. The banks insist on it. But any other thing, like trade payables, no. So if you're a vendor, just a regular vendor, provides goods and materials to this LLC, if they go bankrupt or go out of business, you can only go after the assets inside of that LLC. That's why it's limited liability. That's why they called it a limited liability company. That's the synopsis of it.
You certainly do sound like a professor, and so I'm just wondering, when is my exam?
Well, after the show.
Let's talk about that. And this is, you and I've seen this regularly. Back in my days in real estate, when we had limited partnerships, and they still have such a thing, where you'd have an individual piece of property, let's say it's 100 rental units, and we'd have a general partner who was the guy in charge of everything, who signed everything, and then you had limited partners.
Right.
Explain that.
Well, there's a distinction. The general partner is considered, actually the general partner usually is responsible for the liabilities of that partnership, even if they have limited partners. The reason why there are limited partners is they're limited to their liability. So if the entity defaults, the limiteds are limited to whatever they put in.
Right.
The general partner winds up responsible for whatever is left of the liabilities of that limited partnership. So there are advantages, though, because the general partner can take all of the deductions if it's a loss situation. If it's a real estate partnership, mortgage debt is considered basis, which means a lot of times if you have equity in the properties, you can borrow against the equity and distribute it to yourself and have no tax effect.
There are
there are advantages.
Limited partnerships are still a big thing in big commercial properties. The object is that the limited partners, they are investors, and oftentimes they're guaranteed an interest rate on their money, and then they get a piece of the action when the deal sells. But if the deal goes default, they don't have liability. If they get sued, they're not an individual. They're eliminated from all of this potential liability, whereas the general partner, the guy that's operating the thing, he has the liability. But oftentimes the general partner also can take a salary or
And depending, like a lot of these private equity firms, Joe, there's something in the law called a carried interest. You've probably heard about this.
Yeah.
It's really kind of a loophole they carved out of the law, which allows management companies and these fund managers to exclude up to 20% of the profits of the fund and treat it as capital gain income to them. It's part of their investment return.
Rules.
They were attacking it in the Congress over the past couple of years because everybody knows that this is a loophole.
Hasn't been gone
yet. It's still there even in the new tax code. Yeah. They kept that carried interest there.
The whole concept was...
Except for there are limitations. They did put limitations.
But there was always reasons. If somebody wants to build a subdivision or condominiums or rental properties or whatever, you're going to bring in investors, and the investors want to get a good rate of return and have some security and want to know that they're not going to be sued. I mean, there's a whole bunch of big lawsuits happen on a daily basis.
There's also a downside on the nature of the income you earn from it too, Joe, because if you're a limited partner, any profits that come to you as a limited partner usually a passive income.
Right.
So that means your
passive income is good.
It may be good if you have passive losses. If you don't have passive losses, then it's ordinary. It winds up ordinary to you.
Well, yeah, but you're not paying Social Security and Medicare on it.
No, you wouldn't necessarily.
Because it's not like working a job.
It's not a guaranteed payment.
Right.
Yes.
So you have this real estate partnership, but then, Joe, can the partners actually sell shares in the real estate partnership? Is that where REITs come in? Do REITs come into that equation?
Kind of. What happens is there are shares issued. So let's say we do a limited partnership and we issue 100 shares. They have a Reg D, which allowed only so much money to be raised. It used to be 1.5 million. I have no idea what it is now. But we only were allowed so many partners. They had different rules. Now, if you own, let's say, 1/10 of the property, you have the shares. You can sell your shares to anybody you want. You're a limited partner. If they want to buy you out, that's fine. Or your other partners could buy you out. You own a piece of the deal. There's tons and tons and tons of information. If you're going to start a developing company, let's say you inherit $1 million and you got 10 other people want to throw in another $1 million and you can come up with 10 or 15 million. Believe you me, real estate partnerships become a monster subject because there can be an awful lot to be made.
You know, a new strategy coming out, Joe, is a lot of people are getting fancy and gifting property to their parents, for example. What's the reason for that? Well, the reason is if they hold on to it for a while and then they pass and you get the property back as an inheritance, you get to step up and you avoid the gains on it.
There's strategies like there's no tomorrow. And we don't talk about this very often, Vince, but when I talk to a young man starting, a new client starting an AC business, and I said, well, one of the things you guys need to do is to call Vince and make him have a meeting, and he'll get you started in the right area, because here's a brother and sister that are going to start an AC company. I said, okay, fine. Do you know what you're going to do? Yeah, we're going to go get a checkbook and we're going to go into business. I said, okay. I'm paraphrasing, but literally, there's a couple more steps they should take. They probably don't know about tax ID numbers and all kinds of different little things that need to be taken care of. But a 1.5 hour consultation with a credible CPA will get you started. And then, Vince, under normal circumstances, you would show that business how to set up the thing and how to run it, because they're probably going to hire some more people.
What I encourage them to do is set up a real set of books.
Yep. Yep.
You know, a lot of them, they shy away from it because they don't want to spend the money doing the bookkeeping. Sure. But turns out that their preparation fees sometimes are a lot higher than they would normally be, because the CPA then has to sort through, muddle, investigate, interview, and do a whole lot of work in order to come to a credible numbers that make sense for a tax return. Whereas if you're in a bookkeeping situation, you must record every trend and reconcile your bank accounts every month.
Well, you know, a lot of people, quote, go into business because it sounds very romantic and exciting, undercapitalized too. And then they invariably fail. Only about 90% of the people that go into business fail. Little minor thing. I get in a restaurant business, it might be 95%, you know, but it's a monster number. But if you win in ahead of time, and when I was back doing real estate properties, we would do cash flows that would go out sometimes for 3 years. And it would show us if once we did the cash flow, how much money we needed before we turned positive cash flow. We had to fund the thing, the business, with $100,000, $1 million, whatever the number was, based on pre-planning.
Yeah, talk about planning, Joe. You know, sometimes you might even just look at things like, when should I get a line of credit? Mm-hmm. A lot of small businesses, they're not qualifying because a lot of banks won't give it to them unless they have a little bit of a track record. But once you have a track record of 2 to 3 years, then you should really start thinking about a line of credit. Why? Because by then, if you're not out of business, you're probably growing. Maybe you have receivables and you need to finance the short-term needs of the company. So you want something like that. So your CPA would be there to help you through that process.
There's blessings and curses of business. If all of a sudden you're growing, that means you're going to have to hire more people. And that also means you have to get more equipment. And all those things cost money and they're front-loaded.
Right.
So now where are we going to get the money?
That's right. That's where these lines of credit come in, or you get SBA financing if you could qualify for that.
SBA is Small Business Administration. I mean, there's lots of things that somebody like you, Vince, who does it on a daily basis, it comes second nature. But the average person starting off, even if they have a good idea and they're properly funded, they can still make mistakes that can hurt them.
Yes. That's why it's important. I mean, of course, it sounds self-serving, but you should talk to a professional when you're getting into business. It could save you a lot of heartache and a lot of money down the road if you do it right.
Listen, that's what our group is here for, folks. Our mission is to help people. Every one of us goes out of our way in all kinds of different ways. I mean, I had an instance, a couple, 3 years ago where a buddy of mine needed to get a reverse mortgage, and he was going to get it up in Michigan, and he went through a lender who was not cooperative, and Mike is not licensed in Michigan. Mike doesn't know anything, but Mike is in a fraternity of lenders, so he found somebody that was user-friendly for this friend of mine and got him the mortgage he needed.
Yeah, I mean, we're not licensed in every state, but we sell to national lenders a lot of times, and a lot of those lenders, reputable lenders, will have correspondence in those particular states. So that's what I did in that situation. I found a very good, reputable lender to hook them up with, and it worked out.
Point I'm trying to say is we're not looking. Of course, we need to eat. I mean, it's hard being a philanthropist without money. So, but the key is that every one of us are here to help people and advise and to teach. Our most important thing is for you to become an informed consumer. No different than this fellow calling in that his wife wants to buy a house, have it in her name. Well, let me just tell you, there are some potential things there if they are not divorced or getting a divorce, that to protect, especially her. I'm not saying you should do this, but I'm just trying to say it's the right thing to do to make sure that all the information is on the up front, above board, so they know what they're going to do. 1-888-221-8990. I've had a couple interesting ones in the last few weeks. It just seems like all of a sudden I'm getting a whole bunch of people that are leaving their companies. And you know, this usually they say this is a sign of good times. When people leave their companies and go into business, or they go to work for another company because they're getting a raise or they're headhunted. And normally in good times, you start losing your good people if you don't pay them enough, because other people are willing to pay them more. So rollover IRAs or accounts that are held, 401ks, 403bs, there's all kinds of letters and numbers. And most of them have the same rules. However, I've often said this is the golden rule in business. He who has the gold rules. And oftentimes the people that are holding the gold are not as, it's an amazing thing. I think they got 50 people taking money, one person giving it back. So the one person giving it back is overworked. So I've had a few that I have chased for a period of time. Now, I am a sweet, lovely, wonderful person, right, Vince?
Oh yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah. on the radio, yes.
On the radio. What happens is, when I talk to these people and trying to help you, the client, I'm not mean or anything. I just explain the facts on what needs to be done, and I know how to ask the questions to help you, and I know how to ask it two and three times different ways to make sure we get the proper answer. And Mike, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
I mean, I've had this happen in my office. They'll call up a company and ask them a question, and they come back to me and say, well, they said no. I said, okay, call back again. Get a different person.
That's what I do with underwriters.
Yeah, it's the truth, though. Once I get no three
just
times.
Keep calling until you get the right answer.
Yes, I was telling this client of mine this morning, I says, well, you know, it's you can't just call up and say, hi, how's your day? You and your husband have a fight this morning? Do you have a hangover? I mean, you know, you don't do that. But, you know, if somebody's in a good mood, let's face it, they're more apt to be nice to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Than if they have some aggravation. So I happened to, after like 10 phone calls, got a really nice person finally that was very helpful. And I did not ask if she was married or anything. But point I'm trying to say is you and I both know that in the same office, across the desk, that one person can be cooperative and the other one can be otherwise.
Well, somebody can just be having a bad day.
That's where right. I was going. I was giving examples of bad days. You know?
Yep.
Anyway, so there are certain things that can be accomplished normally on a timely basis. Now, there's also government regulations. If somebody's holding your money and they don't let loose timely, that's a violation of federal rules. So they have some liability and they can be hurt. So the key thing, I don't threaten until, let's just say it's a week or two too long over and above before I might just get a little more vociferous. But the key is you, the customer, very often don't understand.
Did you say vociferous?
Vociferous. Do you like that word?
I love that word. Yeah. That's a 75 cent. He's coming up with a lot of good ones today.
Vociferous.
Yeah, well, you vociferous. Know,
holy cow. That was, what's that?
Promulgated?
What's that? Promulgated. Well, see, now promulgated is specific. I don't know that word for anything else except for insurance, title insurance.
Right, title insurance.
Yeah, that's the only time I've ever heard of that. But what's those things? Segway.
Segway, yeah.
You remember, nobody ever heard of the word Segway, then all of a sudden, bam, Segway. Became a monster word. And in fact, when we started doing the radio shows down years ago in Palm Beach County, somebody brought that word up 15 years ago.
Well, Segway is really a radio term. What it meant when I started out in radio in the 60s was when a song was finishing and I'd turn up the pot of the next song, so you'd hear the end of one song as the next one began. That's a Segway.
Let me ask you a question. This is in Wisconsin, right?
Yes.
Were they all polkas?
No. I was working for the public radio station that had a classical format, so yeah, you can segue any music.
There wasn't too much Yiddish music back then, you know.
There was quite a bit of Yiddish music. Yes.
On the radio?
On the radio?
On the radio. Yeah. Great song.
Listen, we love Alan to death. In fact, appreciate his friendship and his contributions. We said our group is worth about 200 years of experience, but when we add Alan, we got 300 years.
That's right. But, you know, if I may mention something about Yom Kippur.
Wait a minute. It's Yom Kippur?
Well, it depends on where you're from. It's Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur. There are many.
You don't use Kippur, huh?
I think the proper pronunciation of the first word is Yom Kippur, actually.
Okay. That, I thought that the...
Yom?
Yeah.
I thought the tribe of Levi. Yum,
isn't that a restaurant chain?
Yum Brand.
Yum Brand. Yum Brand, yes.
That's Y-U-M, not Y-O-M. Oh,
I know. But go right ahead. No. I don't want to really interrupt
you. But I do
you.
Know Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Hey.
I just wanted fried chicken yesterday. I just wanted to say that it's really tonight when you break the fast and you have your breaking the fast dinner. It's really the start of the next year, and I just want to wish all our Messianic Jewish listeners a wonderful new year and a blessed new year, and that everything that you are praying for turns out to be for the benefit of you and your family.
Amen.
Amen.
That's an absolute 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. Now, Mike, you're doing construction to perms again, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They disappeared for a little bit, but they're back.
So that means if I want to go buy a lot and I want to build a house on it,
mm-hmm.
I can get it. Now, can I do owner builder?
I do not have a program for that. Do they exist? Probably somewhere, but I can't.
Pretty hard to find.
They're hard to find nowadays.
Yeah. So normally you have to hire a contractor.
Yes.
And the contractor be approved by the lender.
Correct. So if your best friend is a general contractor, you can probably work out an arrangement with them.
There you go.
But yeah, actually we have a very good construction program. Most conforming construction programs require 30% equity in the property. And the reason for that is the bank will give you a construction loan, but at the end of the construction loan, they want to modify that to a Fannie Mae loan to sell to, you know, to the agencies. In order for the agencies to accept that, you have to have 30% equity in the property so you don't have to re-qualify. So if a lender does a 10% down loan, then the borrower has to re-qualify at the end.
Uh-huh.
So that's why very few lenders will do less than 30% down.
And guess what? That's a scary thing for the borrower, too.
Yeah, but we do have it. Well, not necessarily the borrower, because once the lender makes that loan, they're guaranteeing that it's going to be a rollover permanent mortgage.
I got you. It's
a risk of the bank or the lender. Now, we do have a 10% down conventional construction loan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with an approved contractor, you can do a 10% down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you, let's just say I buy a lot for, let's say I bought it 10 years ago for $3,000, but today it's worth $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on appraisal, is it not?
Correct. That would be your equity in the contract.
Because that, literally, 10 years ago in Port St. Lucie, you could buy lots all day long for $3,000.
Mm, you heard that.
Not anymore.
Correct.
In fact, it was maybe a little more than 10 years ago, but it was, there was, in fact, they used to have a trailer out on Gatlin that had a sign on it, Port St. Lucie lots, $3,000 or less.
Mike, you used a term that I had asked you to define it. What is a conforming loan?
Well, there's all types of different loans out there. There's FHA loans, and those loans are guaranteed by the federal government. Conforming or conventional loans are guaranteed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Those are federal agencies.
Yeah, they're federal agencies, but they're pseudo-federal agencies. Actually, they're still in receivership, so they technically, I think that they are government agencies.
I know,
this point, but it's just a different type of financing, and it's sold in different types of mortgage-backed securities, where an FHA loan is guaranteed by the federal government, and they're sold in Ginnie Mae pools. Well, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have their own pools of mortgages, and they're sold out in the secondary market.
But conforming, a non-conforming loan, let's say I want to build a house for $2 million. I'm not going to get a conforming loan.
No, you'll probably get a jumbo loan.
A jumbo. So what happens, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, is it 650, 675?
No, they're at 453,100, but it's different.
How much?
453,100. But it's different in different areas. We have an office down in the Keys, and the loan limits are much higher in the Keys. So if you're in a high cost area, then the loan limits are higher, but not here in our area.
So if you go up into Connecticut or whatever, there's six something or maybe higher.
They could be higher.
Yeah. What happened? And then you have, as long as you stay within that confine, that's a conforming loan, and then Fannie Mae normally will buy that loan from the originator, the company that originated.
Correct. Right. Yeah. And there's advantages to going with a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan. For example, we talked a lot about these HARP refinances. Where when people were underwater on their loans back in 2008, 2009, the government came in and said, we're going to let you refinance. But one of the contingencies was you had to have a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan to qualify for that. So if you had a non-conforming loan that didn't fit into the Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac pool, there was no help for you.
Yep, yep. 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. We got Vince Rizzino, CPA, sitting here. Mike Pollis, mortgage broker. Alan Love, retired prosecuting attorney. Joe Martek, financial advisor. You should be calling us and asking us questions.
Joe, we have a higher 10-year T-bill lately.
T-bill's up. Is it over 3 now?
Over 3.
Yeah, well.
Are we technically inverted?
No, not yet. Close.
So. Well, yeah, this is a constant thing that goes on internally. I've heard it, there's always naysayers and there's extreme positives. To me, right now, you remember, a couple years ago, 3 years ago, the S&P 500 was in the 20 to 22 range from a P.E. ratio, which is high.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, a couple, 3 years ago, that's before Trump got elected, we all thought, hey, you got to be really careful now because the economy is not good and we got that 1.8 and things are not good. And well, then all of a sudden, we now have a gross domestic product that's 3 to 4% and unemployment is just about gone. Now the P.E. ratios are around 16.
I know.
From 16 to 22 is quite a drop. But now there's still the paranoia out there that the economy is going to all of a sudden just decide to quit. Now, at some point, we all know that this arrow doesn't keep just going up. At some point, it has to make the curve and start coming back down again. But here comes the $64,000 question. And Alan and I went through this for a couple of years. We believed that it wasn't going to do the big rise, and it has. We changed our whole way of thinking. But at some point, the curve hits, and the arrow starts to come. Do you have a guesstimate?
One of the things I look at is I don't like to see a divergence between the Dow Jones Industrial Average and NASDAQ. Usually when we are near highs, if you start seeing the Dow Jones Industrial Average moving up and NASDAQ either staying in place or going down, that is usually not a good sign. It's not a predictor. I can't say in a month or 2 months the market's going to come down. It's just, I think, a yellow flag, a warning flag. And we've seen that the last 2 days. The Dow is up about 360 points in the last 2 days, or about 1.5%, while NASDAQ is virtually flat. That is, to me, not a good sign, but that can change overnight. NASDAQ can have a 2% rally tomorrow while the Dow is unchanged. But it's just one thing that I look at, and it's just a cautionary sign.
Well, I look at the NASDAQ 100 that's up around 20% for this calendar year so far, which is about double what the S&P 500, or even better than double, because it's tech heavy.
Right.
Tech heavy. Amazon, Netflix, Apple, today everything was rosy for all of the fangs, which Facebook, Netflix, Google, what are all of them? Apple, what's the S?
That's
whatever it is. Anyway, the techs, and this is a personal belief, and Mike, you might echo this one. Our whole society, everything is going heavy and heavier tech.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the in our lifetime, we went from a syllabus.
No, you went from a syllabus.
Abacus is what you went. Abacus before the syllabus, right?
Yeah. Syllabus when you teach from a syllabus.
Well, technology. Mike, were you around here when we were using the Loran Tower with the old paper charts?
Absolutely.
I mean, everything in the world, the stuff that we take for granted today, you're walking around with a computer in your hand in your pocket that we now call a cell phone. Well, boy, it's not a cell phone. That happens to be one of the things it is.
But you have to be careful because there's a lot of technology that can come out that can quickly change the market.
Yeah.
They're talking about the G5 system, and that's going to be where there's going to be computers that do all the calculations, and your cell phones are not going to be doing the calculations.
Yeah.
So basically, that could destroy the cell phone market.
The key thing, nobody knows, but you see what happens when you stop one thing, you start another thing.
Right.
And in history, people keep saying you put people out of work. I said, we put horses out of work a long time ago, because they used to pull barges in canals. And then all of a sudden, the railroad came in. Whoops. horses started to lose and the canal business went way down. Point I'm trying to say is things change. You stop one, you start another.
The corollary is some of the bigger companies, Joe, that don't stay on top for that long.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing. Yeah.
Look at the photography business, Eastman Kodak Polaroid. Where are they today?
Yeah. Isn't that the
truth? They made a big mistake. They didn't embrace the digital technology, at least not fast enough.
See, I look at Wayne Huizenga. Want to talk about a flaming genius with Blockbuster?
Well, I think there's one left.
One left, one store. I think it's in Wisconsin. Oh, it's in Alaska. Yes. Yeah.
Well, if you look, ExxonMobil, wasn't it the largest corporation in the world for the longest time?
Yeah, yeah.
And now look what's happened.
Yeah, hey, so much for that.
Amazon and Apple.
And it doesn't mean they're going to stay on top forever.
Look at Facebook. That their stock has been hit recently. And, you know, all it takes is a couple of mistakes from management.
Exactly. And technology changes.
But nothing stays the same. But the key is this. When you have a low unemployment rate, and people are making decent wages, the economy is growing, usually one flows into the stock market, one flows into the other. When all of a sudden companies are losing money, we go into a recession, guess what happens? Price of vehicles goes down, price of housing goes down, price of the stock market goes down. There's depression or recession. And we've lived through a number of recessions. Hopefully we won't have another one like the last one here, but the odds are good before we die. Well, maybe Mike, but you know, Vince, you and I are pretty old.
No, you're a lot older than me, Joe. You are very old.
One.
Out of that 400 years, he's about 100 and a half.
That's it. Alan, I was giving you credit for most of the intellect in this room. 1-888-221-8990. I think we've got a producer that's going to flash a card.
He's
going to
flash a card.
Are you going to flash a two?
It's a two.
A two. That means we got 2 minutes left. So the odds are.
Alan wanted a two.
We wanted.
The two-minute warning.
Alan, yeah, we asked before because, you know, David and Jonathan and Tom like to use five.
Yes.
And then count their way down. If we do our show up in Fort Pierce, she gives us like 1 minute. Today was 2 minutes. She held up two fingers.
Right. That's
better than one finger.
It's better than one, right. 1-888-221-8990. You can call the radio station anytime. Pastor Tom, who's not here, Jonathan, who's not here, Pastor Dave, who's not here, they'll all take your calls.
Eventually.
Karen is your call. She'll take your calls and give you our name and number, or take your name and number down and have us call you, and we're here to help you. So anytime you want, just give us a call or call the radio station. Remember, it's toll-free from any place, 1-888-221-8990. And Karen, you got any words of wisdom?
Whoever's calling is going to have to wait.
So words of wisdom.
Those are words.
Or just call back in a couple of seconds.
Yeah, we'll. They'll leave a message, whoever's calling now, and we will get back to you. 1-8. How much time do we have?
10 seconds.
Whoa! Two hands worth. That's really good. Hey, until next week, thank you so much for not calling, except for the one fella who might have a wife or might not.
Exactly.
God bless.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Team MarTech program. The Team MarTech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF MarTech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team MarTech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team MarTech is available at 772-678-7725.